You know, one of the things that my mom tried to ingrain in me as a kid, and I've had people along the way in my life, mentors, different things that have pointed out, that you usually find exactly whatever it is that you're looking for. If you're looking for the good in things, you will find the good in things. If you're looking for trouble, you will find trouble. In fact, one of the things that, you know, when I was a young man, my parents thought that maybe it would be a good idea, you know, to get me out of my environment that I was in high school and set me to a little place called New Mexico Military Institute. And what they found out is that it really doesn't make any difference whether you're paying a lot of money for the school or the school is free or whatever else, that if you're looking for trouble, you can find it. And so my parents promptly brought me back home instead of paying for that. And my mom always would just kind of reinforce that, like, well, you'll find whatever it is you're looking for. And I found that to be true over and over again in life, is that whatever you're looking for, you'll usually find. Now, here in Proverbs chapter 31, you know, I was going to spend some time going through the verses, the first nine verses by Lemuel, and speak about those and give some time to that before we got to the whole part, chapter, you know, verses 10 through 31 about the fearsome, noble wife. You know, I just became evident the more I was talking to people, the first thing everybody said to me was, so what are you doing with that? And I even asked somebody if they would like to preach on the subject. And he said, you know, to me, he goes, my wife has informed me that I should never speak on that passage ever in my life. So anyhow, everybody comes to this passage and they have this kind of sense of perplexity about it. I've heard a number of women say, I love Proverbs 31. I've heard other women say, I hate Proverbs 31. That is the worst passage in the Bible. And I've heard people say things like it's sexist. I've heard other people say it's this great example to live up to. And so I felt the need this morning. We just needed to spend our time in verses 10 through 31. Let's talk about it. I happen to believe it's a wonderful passage, but I think that it's one that has been mischaracterized. And so we want to remember, if you keep in mind, as we've gone through everything that we've looked at in Proverbs, what have we said? That from the very beginning, Proverbs is wisdom literature. It is not guarantees. It's wisdom literature. It's not guarantees. It's not 1 + 2 = 3 every time. It is spirit-led observation of what is most likely to come to pass, but it is not a promise. It is not a guarantee. It is an observation, and the intent of that observation is to help us recognize the way in which people relate to one another and to God, and so that they can be fruitful in those relationships. So, here we go, Proverbs 31, and let's take a look at those verses beginning in verse 10. I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. Please feel free to read along in whatever translation you have. If you're doing that electronically, please set that media device to stun if you would, so you don't bother those around you. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does good to him and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her husband and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow, for her household are all clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates, and when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen and garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her husband and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. her husband also when he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Well, you know, from the very beginning of this passage, the teacher is engaged in hyperbole. Now, some of you are thinking, I didn't want to come to English class. What are you doing to me? He is making statements of, you know, profundity, of overstating everything. But that first question sets the tone for everything in the passage. Who can find an excellent wife? It's as if he is implying that one cannot be found. But yet he doesn't mean it. If anything, I believe he is actually chastening those who would say such a thing. Who can find an excellent wife? Why, just look around you. You see, we typically find whatever we're looking for. So from the very beginning, he engages in this sense of hyperbole, and Hollywood does to us what every storybook has done to us throughout the ages. Hollywood is not new at this. They've just done a really great job of packaging. But Hollywood isn't the first one to engage and painting pictures for us of the unattainable, of the fairy tale ideas of life, of making things happily ever after. Happily ever after is so much older than Hollywood. And yet, we do recognize that they have done such a great job of packaging the impossible images and ideals about marriage that no couple could ever live up to. Happily ever after has people divorcing one another looking for the person who will fulfill their every whim and their pina colada song dreams to make marriage perfect just for them. All we need is just a little more excitement and adventure, right? Well, I'm all for excitement and adventure, but is that what makes a wife great, a woman wonderful? The magazines, they edit photos of women to give them impossible dimensions. Not even the supermodel themselves have obtained those dimensions. In fact, one of the things that was interesting, I was reading through an article the other day all about the how they had been distorting the images of different women, and some of these supermodels beginning to become very verbal about their complaining of what's being done to their images when their own legs are stretched out to make their legs look longer as they're laying there on the beach, or they've polished out imperfections about them and they go, actually, that was, I thought, one of my better features and I didn't like the way they edited that out. And so the models themselves have begun to complain about what's happening. See, one of the things that I love about Proverbs is its keen way of pointing out absurdity and extremes. And if that's what you and I mean by an excellent woman, if we take a look at this and see it in the sense of that unattainable ideal, then we've really missed the point of the proverb writer. He is not speaking of the perfect woman. He is speaking of an excellent woman. Listen, guys. If you have a good wife and you know that what she is like in your life, you already know that she doesn't do you any harm. I don't mean that you've never gotten your ego bruised. Usually we bring that on ourselves. I'm not even saying that she's never made a bad decision. I even know situations in life where a husband and wife had a very rocky time in their life, and maybe there was adultery involved and things like that, and yet through forgiveness and restoration, they have been united together. And they can say of one another, no, this person has never sought to do me harm. And in that moment, I would say that you know what kind of woman the teacher is really talking about. Can you trust her? If you can't trust her, is that because she's untrustworthy or because you are and you're projecting, keeping secrets from her? My bet is she's trustworthy. My bet is that although not perfect, not never making a mistake, but neither of you being perfect, she's trustworthy. I bet you she is. You know, over the years, I was thinking about this, and I was even telling my wife that just this morning as we were waking up, and I've been thinking over this passage and everything, and I said, you know, there's a lot of things that I would tell people about what love is or why I think that you're a great wife and everything else. But I said, you know, in the secret place of my heart, one of the things that I love most about my relationship with my wife is this sense of trust in the most vulnerable of moments. Now, one of the things that if you've never been married before, that this might get, you know, seem a little bit awkward to you. But I want you to listen because even though it may be uncomfortable to hear some of this discussion, I want you to think about who you date and who you give your heart to. You see, over the years, there's been a number of times, medical and otherwise, but in particular, the medical ones come to my mind the most, of where I've been put in an extremely compromising position. How about you? You ever been put in a situation where you just felt completely exposed, or in a situation where you felt completely embarrassed, or maybe even a moment of shame or something like that, and you wondered what people might say, do, or think? You see, the thing that has always touched my heart is that I knew there was one person who would be there and stand by my side and would not humiliate me. I didn't say she didn't tease me. I didn't say that she didn't give me a little bit of a hard time. I'm saying that I knew that she had my back, that she wouldn't humiliate or shame me. Can I just tell you that, you know, we have a growing epidemic in our country of, as people are living longer, of things like Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia that have robbed a lot of people of their life. A couple of months ago, I told you the story about my Uncle Tommy and how he stood by his wife, my Aunt Janie, through about 18 years of her deterioration with Alzheimer's, and she recently passed away. And nobody was more devastated at her passing away than he was. And part of it that was really difficult was that she had sundowners in addition to it. So at night, she would become sometimes physically difficult to deal with. We'll just say it that way, in the nicest way possible. And so people would want him to lock the door or restrain her or something along those lines, and he wouldn't do it. He just couldn't do it. It just broke his heart. And he just said, if that's the way I go, then that's the way I go. But I'm not, I love her and I can't do that. And in her lucid moments, when she would speak so lovingly and kind to him, and I just watched as that man stood rock solid. And in her latter years, took care of her in a way that we typically think of taking care of an infant. Cleaning up, washing, feeding, taking things out of her mouth. I think you get the picture. I told my Uncle Tommy, I said, you know what? I am so grateful that I have you as an example of what it looks like to be a godly husband and take care of your wife. I'm so grateful for that example of what it looks like when someone else is in a very desperate situation and to know that she had you to lean on, that she could be trust you and he wouldn't just turn her out or away, but he cared for her entirely the whole time. And that he misses her so much now, where so many of us after 18 years were tired and so relieved that she went to be with Jesus. He misses her tremendously. She does him good and not harm. It doesn't mean that there's not ever difficult decisions. It doesn't mean that there's not ever things that we call people to account or whatever else. There's this sense in which what he recognizes about her, what makes her an excellent woman, is not that she's perfect, is that she does him good and not harm. Can I just say to every young person, as you're thinking about who you will marry someday, if that's where, how you know, if you're not called to be single, and you know that's a good calling too. Maybe something we don't talk enough about. But then when you look across that person, that one of the questions you ask yourself is, this the kind of person? All right, this is so romantic. You'll love it. Would this person change my diaper? Do I think enough of this person that I would change theirs? You see, because it's not just in the moments when we're young and beautiful, but it's in the moments when everything is falling apart that we find out what love really is, regardless of what Hollywood tells us, regardless of what the fairy tales tell us about living happily ever after. What makes it real, what makes it love, is when in those times where we are most vulnerable, that we have the greatest sense of trust. And we don't do a lot with wool and flax anymore. But does she keep you and the kids in clothes? My wife is always the first person to point out when I need clothes. I just keep wearing things until they fall off, you know, my body from being worn out. I remember at times when we were at our poorest in our family life, and my wife did this incredible thing of working together with other women who didn't have a whole lot either, and they would swap clothes, and there was always boxes in our closet marked different ages, because we had 5 kids, so you got to keep track of all that stuff and pass it on, and then whenever it gets to the last one, then you pass it along, and she kept great track of those things, and some things she looked at and said, this will never fit my child, and you need to take this. And we shared along the way. She wasn't the only wife who did that. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Some of you may have grown up in those hand-me-downs. But does she make sure that her family is cared for and dressed? What a wonderful wife and mother does in caring for their loved ones. Yeah, but Pastor, you know, this woman, it says that she stays up late and gets up early and her candle burns all night. I mean, this is ridiculous. Yes, it is. Remember, I said he's engaged in hyperbole. Maybe you say, well, my wife sleeps in. Oh, my wife goes to bed early. They don't do, you know, burn the candle at both. You know what? I don't know about you, but I've discovered that everybody who is of any value in life at some point or another burns the candle at both ends. I've seen people who are naturally morning people stay up late to get something done because someone needed care for or concern for them. I've seen people who are naturally morning people stay up late into the night caring for a loved one. Haven't you? I've seen people who are naturally night owls get up early to help someone pack a lunch or to pack off into a car to pray for them. I have a really good friend of mine that one of the things I really love is that she is totally a night owl. Like 2-3 o'clock in the morning is when she likes to go to bed. Her husband is a get up at 5 a.m. to leave by 5:15. He is out the door every morning at 5:15. And every morning at 4:45, she gets up before him, and while he is getting cleaned up and ready, she prepares him a full breakfast. She is a saint. And yet, you know, the funny thing is that she would never think of herself as a Proverbs 31 woman. She would go through this passage and just rip herself to shreds. Because after he leaves, she goes right to bed. I think that means she's smart and kind. The truth is that no one can burn the candle at both ends all the time. You remember, the Proverbs reader is not, the writer, the teacher is not engaged, and you do these things, and then this is what happens. It's not 1 + 2 = 3. It's not 2 + 2 = 4. It's observations about the kind of person who is an excellent wife. Now, I don't know why the Proverb writer didn't write about the excellent husband. Maybe he didn't find a good example. I don't know. But I think it's because as he was engaged in this, he was thinking about his own wife. He was thinking about the kind of person who brings honor to the idea of what a wife is like. Now, you could say to yourself, well, you know, what if she's the kind of woman that goes to work in the morning and she has a job and, you know, she's not at the house and these passages are all about people doing that kind of stuff. Well, let's just keep in context when it was written. That just wouldn't have been possible. And so keeping it in context, I think, how can you call that sexist? She makes money. She buys property. She's doing things that are amazing outside of the scope of what was even, that feasible back in her day. And yet she found a way to sock away a little extra money, to do some things, to find things, to obtain things. She's amazing in her own right. But if we overtly, literally read through Proverbs, well, you're right. Nobody makes it. Nobody makes it. But yet I know many a wife, many a parent who stayed up late waiting for their loved ones to get in, who got up early to help them. I know wives who make lunches at daybreak and then go back to bed. I know people who stay up late to make sure that everyone's in and safe or have driven long distances to go and retrieve a loved one. And so when the proverb writer says, who can find such an excellent wife? I think what he's saying is, have you looked around? Do you recognize one when you see one? See, from early on, people have had unrealistic ideas about what the perfect spouse might be. What kind of person the perfect wife might be. And I would say that the perfect spouse is the one who cares enough to do what needs to be done so that their loved ones are cared for. See, later it says her light doesn't go out. And I'm reminded of the passage of the foolish virgins in the Gospels waiting for the bridegroom to return. And in it, it's a warning to all of us who would not be prepared for when Jesus returns, that our hearts and lives would not be prepared. And when it says that her candle does not go out, it's the same kind of context or idea that the person is prepared, that they are making provision for the things that need to be so that they are never without. It just means she's a planner. Everything gets used up. Everything runs out. And you and I both know some people who are always surprised and others who seem never surprised. Have you ever noticed this? I don't know if you've caught on to this. Christmas occurs on December 25th every year. And yet, I'm amazed at how many people are completely caught off guard every year as Christmas comes. Especially us guys. And what it says is that, see, her candle doesn't go out. She's prepared. The noble woman doesn't get surprised by that. It doesn't mean that never. It means there's this general sense in which they are ready for the things that are coming, prepared. And then it talks about ships and goods from afar. And, of course, that's nothing impressive today because, honestly, everything comes from China. But in the Bible times, when those ships came with special goods and you had to be ready to know when those ships would come back and the exotic things like cinnamon, which are not a big deal today. But there's this sense in which she's prepared for all the things that come. Today we might say she knows when double coupon day is and she knows when the shoes are on sale. This week my wife, I was amazed, it came to Emma's birthday, our youngest daughter's birthday, and we were wanting to get her some basketball shoes. She plays basketball. And so, lo and behold, I was completely unaware that Carnival was having a shoe sale this weekend. Anybody else know that? Did you know that? That Carnival was having a shoe sale this weekend? And so my wife was just like, hey, we're going to go over and we're going to get her some great shoes. And we did. We got her some really good basketball shoes. And she's excited about it and everything else. But here's the thing is, I'm not aware of things like that. I'll be honest. It never even crosses my mind. I don't like shopping. I think that when I walk into stores, they turn off the oxygen. And then it's like this game for me to get out before I run out of air. But she knew. And so we were able to do something nicer for her, and she didn't just get the shoes, but she got the watch and some other stuff, and it was really cool. And you see, the point in the passage is that this is a person of character. Really, as you go through the entire chapter, we walk about and selling and buying and anything else she can do to take care of her family. But the truth is, at the end, these words that stand out most, she is clothed with strength, with honor, and with dignity. That she can laugh at herself in the days ahead. She can deal, or literally, the Hebrew says, cope with adversity. You see, these are intentionally nurtured qualities that are obtained through the crucible of life. You're not born with these things. You're not born with strength and honor and dignity. You get them in the crucible of life. When life turns up the heat and you find yourself in the fire, in the mix, in the pain of all of those things, and God's purifying, pulling all the garbage out of our life, what is left? And if you want to have an excellent wife, then the person that you need to find is that person who is willing and able to put their trust in God, to lean into life as the way it comes and not demand it on their own terms. You see, what makes this wife excellent is not that she's done all these things, but that she is the kind of person who is willing to go through those things with you. And here's the clincher. at the end of the passage, he wraps up all the hyperbole with this. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praised her, because many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Now, before you read something into that, if you go back up to the top and he asked that question, an excellent wife, who can find? See, guys, what he's trying to tell us is this woman's not hard to find. She's your wife. You don't have to look anywhere to find her. She's your wife, your mother, the mother of your children. You see, that's the real point. Who can find? Well, you see, every God-fearing woman knocks herself out trying to be this woman right here. And some lament that they will never measure up, but you see, that really misses the point. Gentlemen, your wife is that woman. And if you don't see it, the problem isn't hers. It's yours. Wives, that ideal, when you feel like beating yourself up, when you think that you don't measure up, could you remember that this is engaging in hyperbole? And could you look at those verses and recognize, would you do yourself the kindness? Oh, yeah, I've stayed up late. Yeah, I've gotten up early. Yeah, I've done good to my husband and not harm. I've been faithful. Even when you find all the things that the accuser of the brethren, when Satan would accuse you and point out to you every time you failed, would you just tell him to shut up? Because he's the liar. And what he wants to do is tear you down and accuse you. But would you remember all the times that you've done right? Give yourself a gentle pat on the back. I mean, don't break your arm doing it, but you know. But let yourself off the hook. You see, I have this confidence as I watch couples over and over again, as I do marriage counseling, as I sit with people in marriage seminars and different things like that, I am really convinced of this, that most everyone has the perfect spouse. They just don't know it. They're looking for Hollywood to solve their solutions, to solve all their problems. They're looking for someone to create the perfect person that doesn't exist. They're looking for something, an ideal, a concept, or whatever else that is unattainable. And the proverb writer calls us back to reality. Who can find such an excellent wife? Honey, I already found mine. Maybe one of the sweetest gifts you could give to your spouse is to say those words. Guys, make her feel like Proverbs 31. Women, believe that God is shaping you into that Proverbs 31 woman day by day, and that you're already her. And if you're not, if you stand at a place where you find yourself a long, long way away from that, if brokenness has robbed you of joy, if you've been torn asunder in life repeatedly and you feel completely destroyed, can I say to you that I know a God who puts lives back together, who sets the lonely in families, who takes people who have been caught up in slavery and prostitution specifically, or whose lives have been destroyed by every kind of addiction or anything else. And he heals them and makes them whole. And he makes Proverbs 31 women and guys of that same kind of character and integrity over and over and over again out of the piles of rubble that we call our lives. Can I say to you one last thing? You will find what you are looking for. And if you make her feel like the wayward wife of Proverbs 6, then, buddy, it's not a guarantee, but I can bet you, and I wouldn't bet you any more than I bet you, that you'll get just what you're looking for. So make her feel like a Proverbs 31 woman. Let's stand. Can I have the prayer team go ahead and come on up? You know, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got as a young man was to make sure that the people around me, if I was going to be in leadership, that the people around me would know that I value them, that I think highly of them, that they need to feel the sense of your joy and your pride in the people that you care about, the people that you work together along with, the people who, you know, make your life what it is. Do they know? And I go back to my mama telling me that, you know, you find what you're looking for. Wouldn't it be a wonderful way to start this school year, this fall, whatever it is, that you and I would commit in godly character to build up those in our lives? Husbands building up wives, wives building up husbands, parents building up children, children giving thanks for the parents that you have, recognizing the good people around you and the good gifts that God has given you in them, and your workplace. Maybe you like your workplace. You got a great boss. Maybe you might love up on them and tell them how grateful you are for their leadership and for the kindness with which they lead the organization that you're a part of. Maybe it might be as a teacher that you would tell your students how smart they are, how wise they are at their young age. Maybe you might encourage them when they're doing well. Maybe you might encourage them when they're not. Maybe you might look around for the people that you engage every day that you think nothing about the services they render but are great blessings in your life, from the counter of your favorite retail place or restaurant to the guy picking up the trash at your curb, to the postman who brings faithfully your letters and, yes, even your bills. And give thanks for all the wonderful blessings in your life. To extend your words of kindness and favor over them, because you always find exactly what it is that you're looking for. Let me also say to you this morning, maybe this morning you've been the person who always sees the glass half empty. You've always been the person who looks at things in a very negative way, and it's just a crushing weight. Sometimes you think to yourself, why am I so negative? Why do I always feel so down about things? Why do I beat up even the people I love? And maybe it's time this morning to break that yoke of slavery off of your life. And you might come up here to one of these prayer team members and say, you know what I need this morning? I need freedom. I need the joy of the Lord. I need to see good in my circumstances, in my difficulties, in my trials. I don't want to live in this place of negativity and self-destructive behavior. Maybe you'd come this morning and say, would you pray with me? Would you pray for me for freedom? Would you pray for me to be filled with the joy of the Holy Spirit that isn't determined by my circumstances? Would you pray for the Lord of heaven and earth to set me free from the bondages that I have strapped onto my own life? Maybe you would turn to a neighbor or friend and ask them to pray with you, but maybe you would come up here and say to them, I need prayer this morning. And maybe what you really need is you need to know Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior. That you need a whole new perspective on life. Can I tell you about Him who willfully stretched out His arms and gave His life for you? Because in the midst of our fallenness and all of our failures, it says that God so loved the world that He looked down through the hallways of time and saw wars and rumors of wars and the fallen nature of man. And He said, that is worth giving my life for. And maybe what you need is a Jesus perspective on life. And you would say this morning, I need Jesus. And you would come and talk to one of these folks right here, and they'd love to explain to you how to exchange your life for His. Why don't you come? Let's worship the Lord together.